Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm joined today by Lincoln Chafee, the governor of Rhode Island, and a continuation of the conversation that we began last week. Last week, we discussed the national political scene, in particular the problem of the polarization and lack of cooperation between the two major parties. Today, we'll focus more on his time as governor. Governor Chafee was elected to the governorship in 2010 as an independent, having left the Republican Party in 2007. Last year, he joined the Democratic Party. Governor Chafee, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Grant.
Your state was hit particularly hard by the recession, and your time as governor has corresponded with the effort to try to bring it out of that. Why was it hit so hard?
My predecessor as governor kind of took a Tea Party approach to the recession. And when the revenues, because the economy was crashing, declined in our state, instead of looking at it in a dual fashion of we might have to get some more revenue with some tax increases while we're making the necessary cuts, my predecessor did it all on cuts. Mm-hmm. And so particularly with higher education, deep, deep cuts to higher education, and which affects our universities, our community college. And then the other deep cuts in particular were to our cities and towns, state aid to cities and towns. And they adversely affected those that could least afford it. The wealthy communities don't get a lot of state aid, so when it's cut, it doesn't affect their budgets. But the poorer communities depend on the state aid. So it was very, very backwards. And so there's a lot of repair work to be done when I came in. And then the third thing my predecessor did was invest a huge amount of money, $75 million, a lot of money in Rhode Island, with a failed venture with a baseball player, Curt Schilling's video game venture, which had really almost infinitesimal chance to be successful. But they did it anyway, and it predictably did fail. So those things all coming in and a slow transition out of our old industrial economy, factoring some of the challenges we face in Rhode Island, I'll be honest, with our corruption issues, all these all just make it difficult to grow the economy when nationally it's been difficult.
Tell me a bit more about some of the initiatives that you pursued there.
Well, of course, I had to have some revenue, which is taxes, to get the money back into our poor cities and towns and to our universities and community colleges. And of course, that's always controversial anytime you have to raise taxes. But I knew we had to do it, and I'm willing to take the heat to do the right thing. And those are the building blocks, I think, for a good economy. Invest in your education. Have good schools. No more giveaways of to the baseball player, and invest in our roads and bridges. And that's what we're doing. It's taking time, but it's paying off now.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee. I've got kind of a wonky question for you now. Relatively recently, your state changed its governmental system to provide a clearer separation of powers and to give the governor more power relative to the legislature. Rhode Island's legislature, like New York's, can sometimes be ethically challenged. But here in New York, the concern is that the governor may have too much of the upper hand, particularly in the way that budgets get determined. So I wanted to know, have you approached your time as governor in this relatively new system in Rhode Island from any particular vision of the kind of institution that you're trying to build in these early stages going forward to leave to other people?
Well, that separation of powers change was way overdue, and that still didn't dramatically change the tilt of powers. It helped away from the legislature back towards the executive. It helped. But in Rhode Island, we have, if not the strongest legislative constitution of any state, then one of them. One of the very, very – the speaker is very powerful. We don't have line item veto. The governor does not have line item veto, for instance, in Rhode Island. The legislature, it's very easy to override a governor's veto. There's a lot of advice and consent by the Senate on gubernatorial appointments. It's just a very strong legislative constitution. And I knew that going in. But that separation of powers helped a little bit, but it's still very, very tilted towards the legislature. And I governed as a mayor with a strong executive mayoral charter, and I like it a lot better. I always dealt well with my city council, and the Democratic City Council was a Republican at the time, and we got things done. This is hard, much harder when you have a speaker and a Senate president and they have enormous amounts of power.
And what about in the budget process itself? Tell me a little bit about the kind of authority that the governor has and how that process works. Because, again, here in the state of New York, the governor really does have a pretty strong hand over that.
We don't have that in Rhode Island. And a lot happens in the budget and in Rhode Island at the 11th hour. At the end of the legislative session, everything happens in the budget, and they can override the governor's veto, and we don't have line item veto. So even if they were going to override the governor's line item veto, taking one element of the budget out, at least it puts the spotlight on that issue, and we have a public debate on it. Without that line item veto, just everything gets put in there in the darkness of night. It goes sliding through. And if the governor's going to veto the budget, he's going to veto the whole budget. And then there's an easy override. We're overdue to fix this in Rhode Island. Give the governor line item veto. Look at the level of override the legislature have, that low level of override of the gubernatorial vetoes, advice and consent on some appointments. Wishful thinking maybe under the system of how we're going to fix it, but we're due in Rhode Island to balance it with the executive. I served as a strong mayoral charter. I think it's a better way to govern. And you mentioned New York and maybe too much power of the governor. You have elections every 4 years to fix that.
Well, the 11th hour stuff is going to sound very familiar to our listeners because we get that just about every year. The other thing about New York that I wanted to put to you and get the contrast again with your own experiences. In New York, the politics of geography become very important, especially the distinction between upstate and downstate, and even more particularly New York City and the rest of upstate. So I was wondering, since Rhode Island is such a compact state, how do the politics surrounding geography play out there?
We're a very retail state. We see our senators and our congressmen and our mayors and our governors in the grocery store and at the gas station. And so it people just are used to expressing their opinions to their politicians. It's unique in that fashion, traveling here to other states and imagining what it's like for a politician that you never see. That's just so different from around.
And does Providence kind of drive everything? Is there sort of a Providence rest of the state dynamic, or are any other kind of, even within that small area, some kind of geographical division that's important?
No, I would not say there's any kind of geographical power. It's more on who's the Senate president and who's the House Speaker, and if that wherever they're from, and it could be anywhere in Rhode Island, which depends on which district gets elected, they have the power.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee. He's been serving as Rhode Island's governor since 2011. Rhode Island has been one of the models for the state health care insurance exchanges under Obamacare. How did you approach that? What decisions were most important in accomplishing that?
Well, first of all, we had it passed to have a form an exchange through the House, but it failed in our Senate, and they adjourned without passing our ability to form a health insurance exchange, and it got hung up on some abortion language they just couldn't resolve. And so I instituted it by executive order, and then we got a good team working on it, and now we're leading the country in signups to this exchange. We've had tremendous success communicating with our people. I have to say that this has not been a partisan issue in Rhode Island, thank goodness. The detractors are few. It seems like everybody in Rhode Island says, let's try it, Democrats, Republicans, Independents. Let's try something different from the old escalating insurance rates on your Blue Cross or whatever your insurance might be and going to the emergency room to get your primary care. Let's try this. And we've had great success. And it's very interesting the level of attention our citizens are paying to the details of the different plans that are offered. We're just flabbergasted as we look at how this is unfolding, how the people reading the fine print and paying attention and making really good decisions on the kind of insurance they want to pick on the exchange.
And why do you think Republicans in your state then aren't digging in on this? Because that does seem to be one of the big issues across the country. And it does, as you mentioned in last week, I think it's going to be one of the big issues in 2014 midterm elections.
Yeah, I don't know why, but certainly I think in Scott Brown, when he ran in Massachusetts, didn't he use the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare to win that first race? That was one of the big issues right across our border. But the Republicans in Rhode Island, they seem to get into gun issues and other social issues. Thank goodness they've not focused on this one.
And did you take a particular approach in getting that team together? Because you mentioned that as being an important piece of why the rollout has worked well. What decisions did you make there?
Oh, these were critical. Having a good group of people. Our Lieutenant Governor, Elizabeth Roberts, has been involved in health care issues for a long time. She was very important in putting this exchange together. And then we hired one of the original architects of health care reform back in the 90s under President Clinton, Christy Ferguson. Mm-hmm. And she is a Rhode Islander, and she worked for Governor Romney on his Romney Care. And so very experienced in putting these together. Our Secretary of Human Services, Steve Constantino, had been finance chairman of the House for many years and knew these issues well. So it was a great team of people. Dr. Hittner, who'd been involved in our hospitals, helped. And so a good team.
And you started out your political career on the Warwick City Council. Then you became its mayor. You also served a term in the United States Senate. Now you're a state governor. So you've seen it all. At heart, do you think you are more of a legislator or an executive?
I'd say executive. I really loved my time as mayor. I had, in my time, 7 years as mayor, I had four different council presidents, Linda Sullivan, Joe Gallucci, Carlo Pizzaturo, Jerry Gibbons. They're all different. And I just enjoyed working with them. Had to have Democratic votes to get anything passed. I loved the challenge. The economy was better in the 90s. That helps to have a wind at your back. It's been harder being governor with the wind, the economy being difficult in Rhode Island, wind more in your face. But I do love it.
And you've also served at all three levels of government, local, state, national. Which level of government do you think works the best given its role?
I would say the state, despite the challenges that the economy we've had in Rhode Island and some of the, as I said earlier, some of the small issues that have become big issues, I think unnecessarily, despite all that, so much is happening at the state level. Just you mentioned earlier the health exchange of what we're doing there, even with climate change, even with immigration. I mean, these should be really federal. We should have federal immigration reform. This shouldn't be done state by state. And we should have federal climate change looking at extreme weather and how we prepare for it. It is happening, but we're doing it state by state. So it's been fun in all the working with the other governors. I love going to the governors' conferences and networking with Republicans and Democrats. Our New England governors have a great group. We even work with Eastern Canadian premiers up there with New Brunswick and Quebec and Labrador and Newfoundland, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island. So that's the pleasure you get, sharing ideas and making your community better.
And having been on both sides of the legislator-executive divide, what do you think is the most important thing that executives underappreciate about legislators and their jobs and vice versa? What's the most important thing that legislators underappreciate about executives and their jobs?
Well, so often it's all about ego, and we got to listen and talk to each other, and that's so important that they run just as hard for their seats, and I've done that. I worked just as hard as a mayor to become mayor and become a councilman, and they work hard to become a state representative or state senator. They want to be listened to. They want to be talked to, included in the process, and that's just natural human emotions.
In case you just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guest is Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee. Now, you have announced relatively recently that you're not going to run for re-election as governor. Is this it for you in terms of elected political office?
I'm still feeling young, and I've covered the gamut, local, state, and federal, so we'll see. I don't have any plans.
And is there a particular office you could see yourself running for, hypothetically, if you were going to run for something?
Not at this time. I'm I've put my heart and soul into this job as governor, and looking forward to catching my breath at the end of this term. 4 good years.
And I have a more delicate question for you now, but I do want to ask it. I couldn't find an especially recent report of your approval ratings, but the approval ratings that I did find up until a few months back were relatively low as far as executives go. So what's been driving that?
Well, I think I've talked about it here, these small issues that erupt, I think, totally unnecessarily, and not having a political party, being an independent, that would rally behind what I thought made a lot of sense. Certainly getting undocumented students to be able to go to higher education was a huge controversial issue, I thought, totally unnecessarily in Rhode Island. Of course we want our youngsters to go on to higher education, to be able to get that in-state tuition. We had a capital punishment case. I've said over and over again, I'm opposed to capital punishment, and you can vote for me or against me based on that if you want, but that erupted. I talked about the holiday tree and Christmas tree, just nonsense, diversionary issues. The last thing I want to be involved is the war on Christmas. And then, of course, gay marriage, marriage equality. These are some of the issues that have been strangely controversial. They make a lot of sense in Rhode Island and to any community. And you ask your politicians how they feel on issues, you answer honestly. And I was asked all these questions when I was running on immigration and in-state tuition, on gay marriage and on capital punishment. And once I get elected, I'm going to do what I said I was going to do in the campaign.
Do you think that perhaps the changing of the parties had an element to it, of being Republican, then being independent, being Democrat, and so in a sense, you lose the loyalists across all three? You know, we don't really know where the guy is and where he's going. Is that an issue?
Yes. I talked about the wind being in my face, the economy, my predecessor having not made the investments in cities and towns and in higher education, and then investing in the failed venture with the baseball player. These were all factors, and not really having the media. They seem not to focus on the core issues. So you add all those things together, and it's a little stronger wind in my face than I have experienced in my other political offices. But now it's interesting to hear those candidates that are running for governor saying everything. They support gay marriage. They support in-state tuitions. These are other Democrats that are running. They support the investments that I'm making in education and in infrastructure. It's exactly what I've been saying in my tenure as governor. Now the other candidates are saying.
Do you think that the approval ratings affected your decision not to seek reelection?
Oh, yes, without a doubt. I mean, okay. You can't ignore that. And ability to raise money, you factor all these in. And ultimately, I think I could have been successful. I do think it's a marathon. And the investments that I've been making, the tough decisions I've been making, I think are going to be vindicated. And it's just a time my family and I talked it over, and we've been at this for a long time, all of us in all these various offices, and time to take a break.
And so now you've said, all right, I'm not going to run again, and you've still got a bit of time left in office. So do you get a sense that then gives you a space that you might not have had before? And it sort of goes back to this problem of the polarization between the parties, the nastiness. You've kind of taken some of that off the table here. Can you see a difference now in your office as governor?
Yes, absolutely. And just having the time that you're not raising money, and also being a new Democrat, going to every Democratic event. Once I became a Democrat, I had to go out and meet my new party in Rhode Island, every spaghetti supper and breakfast. So having the time, not fundraising and doing some of those political events, is very beneficial to focus on the issues and not be in the middle of the partisan warfare.
And there's one state, I believe it's just one in the country, Virginia, that doesn't allow their governors to run for reelection. Do you think maybe there's some wisdom in that then, based on your experience here in the last few months?
I've watched Virginia. They every 4 years, a new governor. No, I think having that second term is important. You see so many things happen in the second term as you've learned through the first 4 years, and then usually that second vote is such a vote of confidence to continue doing what you've been doing. I, I think that 4 years is term limits, a little tight.
Now, this final question before we get to the three questions, I was told to ask you by a constituent in Rhode Island. And he said, ask him this. When he leaves office, will he still see Ernie the Barber?
Of course. Of course.
And I imagine then that, like a lot of barbers, this fellow Ernie, whom I've never met, likes to give political advice. So what advice has Ernie been giving you lately?
Well, my first budget, which included, because I had to get the revenue, my predecessor had not done nothing on the revenue side. It had all been in cuts, and Rhode Island was suffering as a result. I had to go to the revenue, and one of those was taxing haircutters. So I asked Ernie about it, of course. I told him my budget's coming out, and it's going to include expanding our sales tax into services. It's in goods, as many states are. But if we could lower it and expand it into some services, I thought that made sense, because when the sales tax was put in, most of purchasing was done just by – it was goods. And it's changed over 60 years since the sales tax was put in Rhode Island. Now it's a majority of services is what we buy and consume. And so it just made sense. And we could lower the sales tax. That was my first budget. And I ran it by Ernie, and he said, I'll pay my fair share if you spend it wisely. And I said, we will. We'll put it into education. We'll put it into our roads and bridges. We'll put it back into our poorer communities that have been suffering under these deep cuts. And he said, okay. And so the media, when I said that in my state address, they went down to interview him. And he was good to his word. He said, well, we need government. And we wish we didn't have to pay any taxes. But what are we going to be like back in the 1500s with anarchy?
Let me get to the three questions. First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
I would say I'm in the fourth quarter here, fourth year as governor, and the fourth quarter in any game is the most important, and so this is an important year as governor.
Second, what's your worst trait?
I would say that my laid-back style as a politician, that if the people that criticize me, it's not on the issues that I stand for, I would say. It's that they don't understand my laid-back style.
Finally, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
I would say this, the immigration, that fight to provide in-state tuition to our illegal documents, that was such a surprise that it made no sense that these youngsters didn't have the same chance. They're here. We all know they're here to go on to be able to afford higher education. It's just common sense. Says, let's get this. We want an educated population, whether illegal or not. And let's address immigration in a different way. But those that we know are here, let's get them educated.
And you got that through.
Yes, we did. But boy, oh boy, the opponents. And also politically, it surprised me that those that were the Republicans and the like that are opposed to providing this in-state tuition. This is a fast-growing demographic voting bloc. I mean, just politically, don't you want to be on board with their issues? That surprised me.
That was Lincoln Chafee. Governor Chafee, thanks again for extending the conversation with me.
My pleasure, Grant. Great program.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Research assistance was provided by Brooke Weinstein. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. Visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations for more information.